This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani this morning.
Hey, good morning. Monday morning. It's a fantastic morning for
all. Yes. Did you have a good weekend?
Actually, yeah, I did. Spent
school holidays, right?
School holidays. we went to the park. We went to the pool.
Nice. How long is school holidays again?
2 weeks. It crosses over to the first week of Ramadan. So, you know, my 9-year-old has promised me that she'll start fasting this year full. And she demands, the inflation rate has hit this Ramadan payment. She demands at a minimum 2 ringgit per day. It used to be 1 ringgit, you remember.
Oh, so this is the first time she's going to be fasting for the full day.
Yeah, well, that's
cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I remember
so
the first
ringgit,
time.
So 2 ringgit, 60 ringgit in total. Let's see how it goes.
So I remember also the first time I started fasting full. I think I was 10.
About that.
Primary school, and then it was a big deal.
Did you demand this high of a payment? I mean, I can't imagine.
No, because my mom would lecture me about, you know, not doing it for money. But, you know, it was bragging rights. But also because you thought, oh, I'm a big girl. Now I will fast with the adults. There you go. But yes, we've got Ramadan creeping up on us in about a week.
In about a week, actually.
We've also got Memorial Day in the US today. So 30th May is traditionally a Memorial Day, but it's also now officially observed on the last Monday in May, which also happens to fall on 30th May. Mm. So there you go. I don't know much about Memorial Day because, you know, it's a very US-centric thing, but it's a day to remember those who died in active military service.
So when I was studying in Australia, they celebrated Anzac Day.
Anzac Day,
and it was a big thing for Australians and New Zealanders. I would imagine Memorial Day to be something similar to that of Anzac Day. I wouldn't know much as well, but when you celebrate those who die in active military service, one thing that I read, interestingly enough, yesterday was on the Battle of Verdun. It was the longest battle in World War I history. And today it's a celebration of Franco-German relations.
Wow.
So Helmut Kohl and François Mitterrand, the from prime ministers and the chancellor of Germany, they celebrated it in 1980. Yesterday, François Hollande with Angela Merkel celebrated.
Was it yesterday? This was the anniversary, was it?
In fact, yes. And 100-year anniversary, actually. Wow. So the battle happened many years ago, about
there
100
you
years
go.
Ago.
Okay, there you go. So I've also been reading that Memorial Day is unofficially the start of summer in the US. So there you go. Markets are closed overnight in the US, so technically overnight for us. But we've still got Dodge Dolan calling in from New York on Market Watch. So he's a good sport, always up for a chat, even though it's a public holiday for him. That's coming up in an hour. Other great shows coming up this morning. We've got Datuk Dr. Muhammad Daud Bakar, Executive Chairman of Amani Group, on the Breakfast Grill, a renowned Sharia scholar. Ibrahim, you are going to be speaking to him.
So when you think about Islamic finance, you have to think about Sharia scholars. And it's the Sharia scholars that would approve a certain structure or transaction to be deemed as Sharia compliant. So as much as you need a board of director to govern the corporate governance of the company, you need Sharia boards to actually govern the Sharia aspect of it. So Dr. Daud Bakar is the chairman of Sharia Board of Bank Negara. He's also the chairman of the Sharia Board of Securities Commission and Labuan Offshore.
Okay. And very noted name.
So he wrote a book called Sharia Minds, and this is about putting the application into theory.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there there's a limited supply of Sharia scholars in the industry, right? So you've got Sharia scholars on the boards of many Sharia compliant companies.
Yeah. So you have one. Okay. So imagine this: Securities Commission puts a limit on the number of boards or board of directorships that you can take in companies. I think the number is set 5. I stand corrected. But Sharia boards, there's no restrictions. That means one individual can actually sit up to, in the case of Daud Bakar, he sits in up to 27 companies and banks. Imagine if you have to split your time with 27 corporations, and there's only 30 months in 30 days in a month. That literally means one day in one bank. Is that even attainable? So that is the question that I want to ask him.
Okay, there you go. Dr. Muhammad Daud Bakar, Executive Chairman of Amani Group on The Breakfast Grill. He is a renowned Sharia scholar. So we will be talking about many issues in Islamic finance. That's on The Breakfast Grill today, 8:05. After the grill, we've got current affairs, and we're going to continue our focus on aviation. It's sort of a running theme that we've been focusing on the morning run. So as you may have heard, the Department of Civil Aviation recently proposed increasing the airline operator fees. They claim that the charges have remained fixed for the past 40 years, so it's high time to raise them. However, there was some kerfuffle, shall we say, following this proposal, because they wanted to raise it tenfold. And that raised concerns from not just the airlines, but also consumers worried about ticket prices going up. So today we're going to explore the effects of this fee hike on the aviation industry.
Yeah, you know, when you raise something 10 times, it's 1,000%. So imagine that. I'm just glad that my daughter is not raising that whole plus 10 times, or else I'll be...
Don't give her ideas.
Yeah, or else I'll be having my own current affairs segment. So, but we saw this announcement about 2 months ago, and I think it's timely for us to actually have a chat. Truth be told, we've been trying to get Department of Civil Aviation over for a grill. The talks are still ongoing, but I think it would be nice if they had actually come on.
I think at the moment now, they haven't fixed on this tenfold hike. They said they might stagger it over a certain period of time. But we'll see. We'll find out more from the experts of the aviation industry on current affairs today. And Pressing Matters every Monday, where we look at the cover stories on The Edge Weekly with Joyce Goh, Associate Editor on the Corporate and Capital Markets Desk at The Edge Media Group.
This is fantastic, because this week we'll be discussing with her on media. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be asking her on ADEX as well, or advertising expenditure.
That's right, especially the Star Media Group. If you remember, they are trying to diversify into the expo events space.
The MICE, right?
Like, but
meetings,
also,
conventions and exhibitions.
Yeah, and also I think they bought the rights to a Comic Con, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And we all know how much people love comics now, and Marvel.
I watched X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, you did?
And I can really imagine the number of toys that you can churn out just following that one movie.
Merchandising, my friend, merchandising. Let's find out more with Joyce Goh at 9:35 a.m. on Pressing Matters. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock. Here are some things you need to know as you start your week. The WEF is happening this week. That's the World Economic Forum. Also, some of the Sungai Besar and Kuala Kangsar nominees have been announced. And also, Bank Negara filed a police report against the Wall Street Journal over the weekend.
Okay, so where do we start? Let's start with the World Economic Forum, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a special lineup following the World Economic Forum. We have tomorrow Salil Shetty, the Secretary General of Amnesty International. And we will be asking Amnesty International about the core values of human rights and how to achieve them. On Wednesday, we have Rami Jokela, Group VP of the Digital ABB Project. Now, ABB is one of the biggest corporations in the world. And I think we'll be asking Rami on the very notion of digitization and technology.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Thursday is a biggie for us. We'll have Sigve Brekke, the president and CEO of Telenor. Telenor owns 49% of Digi.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you think about Digi being this whole nimble, fun kind of brand, very exciting, it's because of Telenor's rebranding work. And Sigve Brekke is sort of responsible for that, or 49% responsible
Well,
he
would be able to discuss Digi's plans in Malaysia, as well as Telenor's plans in the Asian region. So you're right. I mean, this is a really great lineup we've got in line with the World Economic Forum that's happening on Wednesday and Thursday. So some big names from the forum coming down to KL, and we're going to get them on The Breakfast Grill this week. Also, we were talking about local politics a little bit earlier, but let's take a look at the Kuala Kangsar and Sungai Besar seat, because this is going to be kind of the week before the nomination is announced, right?
Yes. Okay. So the nomination is going to be announced on the 5th, which is this coming Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But we sort of know who the lineup would be, at least between PAS and UMNO. Amanah will definitely contest, apparently, according to the news yesterday. And in Kuala Kangsar, Datin Mastura Muhammad Yazid, which is the widow of the deceased MP, she will face Perak's PAS Women's Chief Head, Dr. Najihatu Solehah Ahmad. And this is largely, Kuala Kangsar has been largely a wanita kind of seat.
Oh.
Rafida Aziz held it for, I think, 3 decades. And there was a bit of a kerfuffle in the last general election when Wan Colonel Naim was asked to contest. And there was an independent, Kamila Ibrahim, which is also from, at that moment in time, Wanita UMNO, she ran as an independent in protest.
Okay, so again, we've got two women facing off. So one from BN, the wife of the late Kuala Kangsar MP, also a medical doctor who will be standing for PAS. Do we have anyone from Pakatan Harapan for this seat?
Yep, so Pakatan Harapan is expected to announce its candidacy this Wednesday. And of course, a lot has been said about how Pakatan Harapan will back Amanah and whether or not they will abandon PAS altogether.
Okay.
It's also worth noting that while Dr. Najihatu Solehah is a medical doctor, Datin Mastura is an accomplished lawyer in her own right. She's a barrister with the Lincoln's Inn. She has been practicing law for a number of years. However, she took a step back to raise her family when her husband was going into politics full time.
Well, you know, there's also this, I think, a lot of chatter around the campaign period for Mastura to be campaigning, but she is observing Ida following her husband's passing. So for the four months and 10 days.
Yes. So I think this will run into the campaign election.
Yes,
period.
For sure. So I think there's a lot of discussion as to whether, you know, that's okay that she won't be present for much of the campaign.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll have to see what the voters, I mean, how they will view it, right? But that's Kuala Kangsar. Let's put a pin in that and let's take a look at Sungai Besar, which is more our backyard, right?
Yeah. So our backyard here, Sungai Besar, which I had dinner. I had lunch in Kuala Selangor. Mm-hmm. Fantastic place, by the way. Nice seafood.
Known for their ikan bakar.
Yeah, ikan bakar. truth be told, I actually swung over to Sungai Besar for just a quick, look. And I'm telling you, the election fever is extremely high there. Of course, the political parties are not allowed to put up banners yet because SPR has not allowed them to. But you could see the insinuation that the people are there.
Oh, they're getting ready for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The election fever is really, really high over the weekend.
All right. In terms of candidates, we only know who UMNO or who Barisan Nasional is putting up, right? For Sungai
Besar? That's right. So it's important to note that UMNO and PAS are fielding winners. They are the winner of Adun Sungai Panjang, which is Budiman Zohdi. He is a true, tried and trusted local boy in Sungai Panjang. And Sungai Panjang is one of the two Aduns inside Sungai Besar.
The other one is Sekin Chan, right?
The other one is Sekin Chan, that's right. A pure Chinese area. There's a lot of DAP support there. DAP has been winning that seat for the past, I think, 5 elections, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the other seat, contestant there from PAS is Adun of Meru, Abdul Rani. And of course, Adun Meru has also won that twice since the political tsunami in 2008. It's interesting when politicians wear that state legislative hat as well as an MP hat.
Okay.
You don't see that often. You only see that in the bigwigs. Normally, you would see that. So, for instance, Lim Kit Siang wears that hat.
I see.
Tan Sri Khalid, Lim Guan Eng, Azmin Ali. You know, only the big names.
Okay.
So, I guess this is between Budiman and Rani, between UMNO and PAS, one of them will be a bigwig eventually.
The other big news over the weekend was the fact that Bank Negara Governor Muhammad Ibrahim has lodged a police report report against the Wall Street Journal, said to be over a letter purportedly from Bank Negara to the PAC chairperson. Now, the letter is classified under the Official Secrets Act, and that was why the police report was lodged. So the Wall Street Journal had tweeted a copy of the letter, and that was later retweeted by its Asia chief editor, Tom Wright. And the letter supposedly confirmed that Good Star Limited was owned by Joe Lowe.
I think the biggest problem with this story is that there is a contradiction in the government's assertion that Good Star, which is now, we know, owned by Joe Lowe, has been since dissolved. And it belonged to the former 1MDB joint venture partner, Petro Saudi. So it's not a Petro Saudi kind of outfit. It is actually Joe Lowe. So the question is, why did our own governor file that report?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, this was something that he did personally. I'm curious to know why he opted to do it himself. I mean, this is something I would assume the legal team would take forward. But we'll find out more. Apparently, Wall Street Journal standing firm on the grounds.
We'll talk about this at length in the 7:35 news segment.
I'm sure it's in the papers today.
So more developments will be known then.
6:21 on the clock. And you know what? We're actually really excited because tomorrow we are looking forward to the Morning Run networking session.
Okay, so the Morning Run's networking session is tomorrow. That's right, Melissa. And this is a conversation that we have with you, the listener. This will be the second session that we're having. The first was, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was great fun. We a bunch of people turned up, and it was a really nice kind of session. Just really relaxed. You know, good conversation, good food, just getting to know each other. And we would love to meet you. So come and join us for a night of great food and conversation at Bobo KL at Jalan Bangkong Bangsa tomorrow.
Yeah, so if you want to join us and if you want to have a chat with us, you can do it using two steps. Number one, just go to bfm.my/bfmcommunity, sign yourself up there. Mm-hmm. And then you have to register, and just putting it out there, you have to pay 50 ringgit for this event. This covers the food and drink, as well as the cover charge to get inside. So you have to go to bfm.my/network series.
Well, it was really cool because the last time, I think we got grilled a little bit, right? So, I mean, for all the people, all those who want to know what it's like to put a breakfast grill or what it's like to grill Arul Kanda.
That's right.
It's like a bit of a behind the scenes look.
We got grilled ourselves, you're right. You know, but that's the whole point, right? It's just trying to understand what works and what doesn't, particularly when we do this day in and day out, and a lot of our listeners just want to know more.
But also because, you know, you and I, we're in the studio together, we're talking to each other, but we often don't see the bigger picture. And I think it's really lovely to finally kind of step out of the studio and meet people out there, I guess.
Yeah, and we go with industry specific sometimes. Like, for instance, we're into aviation. Other times, we're into, say, the 1MDB story. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to actually connect with those that are in the industry, in the financial industry, in the aviation industry, in the automotive industry, and so on.
Sure, fantastic. Come and join us. We want to meet you, and you can grill us at Bobo KL Jalan Bangkong Bangsa tomorrow. Just go to bfm.my/bfmcommunity to sign up, and then you can register at the network series. Okay, let's take a look at some of the other news floating around cyberspace, trying to catch our attention. One that did catch our attention is the Chinese helicopter term, which, according to the BBC, there's a petition to remove it. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about how 19 Singaporean terms or Singlish terms have made it to the Oxford English Dictionary. But now there's an online petition to have one of those terms removed.
Yeah, so if you remember, some of the terms that that were included inside the Oxford English Dictionary or Singlish words includes the word ma.
Also,
many others,
amo,
right?
Also, I think.
Shock. As yes. In, you makan durian, you shock, something like that.
Sotong was also included.
Sotong.
But not because it's referring to squid, but also sometimes because you blur sotong. And that was included in the... Can you believe that was included in the
Oxford Many of them... I mean, it's borderline racism, right? But one word in particular actually took Singaporeans to heart, which is, you're right, Melissa, Chinese helicopter. And right now they have signed... Singaporeans have signed a petition to actually remove the word... Chinese helicopter from the Oxford English Dictionary.
I don't even know what it means. What does Chinese helicopter mean?
Okay, so according to an article by The Star, as in our The Star, Chinese helicopter is a derogatory term for a Singaporean whose schooling was conducted in a Mandarin Chinese school and who has limited knowledge of English. And so a petition signed by a former Straits Times bilingual journalist said that he wants to change this. And he made a petition on the website change.org. And he says that a Chinese helicopter is a true term that people use in Singapore.
Okay.
But it is a derogatory slang. That is in practice.
So he draws the line at it being having a negative connotation, perhaps. Okay.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Just because it has a negative connotation, does it mean that you remove it from the Oxford English Dictionary? We have a lot of the... when you say something about the A word, the B word, the C word, the D word, you can imagine the...
The word already.
The N word, the F word, right? But it's still in the Oxford English Dictionary. So the debate here is whether or not just because something has a negative connotation, do you remove it from the dictionary?
Right, so the dictionary is just putting down facts, right? So this word is in the lingo of Singaporeans. There's also other terms in the Singlish vocabulary which has negative connotations. You are so powderful.
Powderful.
Used to mock others in mispronunciations, and so your English is so powerful. That's also made.
There you go.
I don't know whether they're going to be successful in this, but I do see why they're opting to this. Perhaps, you know, it doesn't reflect Singapore in the best light.
Yeah, it does not reflect Singapore in the best light. But, you know, we had Gurmit Singh, or Pua Chu Kang, as we all know him as, on the show.
Amazing, on the evening edition.
It was 2 months or 3 months ago, right? And I think the evening guys were asking him a very simple question. Were you being attacked from the authorities because of the Singlish usage? And he says, it's quite simple actually, he says that because of the criticism that the show has received from the authorities in Singapore, they made everything in Oxford English on script, but the way they deliver it is still Singlish.
I see. So it's written out in proper English, proper grammar, proper syntax, but you just the pronunciation is Singlish.
Yeah. Okay. So that's their work around it. And I think that's a creative way of trying to bring a local flavor to the show, but at the same time trying to uphold a good set of English language. And I think, it's a responsibility of these TV shows to actually try to promote good English, try to promote good values. But at the same time, you know, if it has no local flavor, then it really is doesn't bring life into it.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people also judge first impressions. You know, you get somebody's pronunciation, somebody's accent, somebody's dialect, in fact. You know what? Someone once told me a long time ago, and this really stayed with me. Someone said, if you meet somebody who's not fluent in English, it just means that he or she is fluent in some other language.
Ah, you absolutely.
Know, don't you think so?
Yeah.
Isn't that
absolutely?
Doesn't that make sense to you?
It makes a lot of sense.
I had a light bulb go on for
me.
Actually.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Just because you're, I mean, like,
so
you know.
Don't judge them because they're not fluent in English. That means that they have a great grasp in another language that you perhaps might not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this... thanks for inspiring.
Monday
at
morning.
At 6:29 on a Monday morning. So let us know whether or not you agree with this petition, whether or not just because it has a derogatory connotation to it, should we remove it from the dictionary altogether?
I feel like this petition has actually highlighted the term Chinese helicopter far more than if they had just kept quiet about it, because now now. The BBC is carrying it, all these international media carrying it, and everybody's looking up what Chinese helicopter means. There you go. 6:39 on Monday, the 30th of May, and we're taking a look at the tech sector and innovation in the tech sector, because there's a famous quote that says, good artists copy, great artists steal. So there's something to be said for being the first one to enter the market. And the history of tech is riddled with cases where a company just straight up takes an old idea, they rejig it a little bit, perfects it, and it ends up as a runway success. And we're talking about Apple mostly.
In 2002, Bill Gates of Microsoft actually showcased the tablet. And he says that this will revolutionize how we view electronic devices. And he says that touch screen's there, everything's there. But it didn't take off for some reason. And I'm not too sure whether Bill Gates is one of the world's best marketeers. No one has ever said that.
Mm.
Maybe the world's richest person, but not so much the world's best marketeer. I think, if anything, that title belongs to the late Steve Jobs. And in 2008, Steve Jobs showed the iPhone. And later on, 1 year later, in 2009, he showed the iPad. And in 2011, Steve Ballmer of Microsoft showed Microsoft's version of the iPad. And everyone said that Microsoft stole the idea of Apple. And Steve Ballmer had a tough time saying that my boss showed this 9 years ago.
Okay.
A little bit rudimentary, but he showed it nonetheless, and he was the first.
So, you know, Apple has been known that, it's been said many times before that Apple didn't invent the smartphone. They just perfected it, got it right, gave users what they wanted, what they didn't know they wanted. And I guess, you know, it's, I don't know about you, but it being in this line, we've been talking about innovation for quite a while now. 2-3 years ago, innovation was the biggest buzzword. You know, you couldn't go to a conference without tripping over the word innovation in the theme or the title.
Yeah.
Now it's disruptor. You know, disruptive innovation, disruptive technology. But I've also noticed a trend recently, Ibrahim, that whenever people talk about innovation, they often talk about innovation slowing down, innovation not coming along at the pace that we once saw a couple of years ago. Do you agree with that?
Okay, so I think I have to agree with you. In fact, there is a big speech coming in, showcased on the BBC. It's given by Tyler Cowen. He is a professor of economics at George Mason University, and he argues that over the past 2 decades, the world has been innovating less. And he is benchmarking from, it's not just 2 decades ago, he's benchmarking on century-long innovation. So he's looking at, say, the Renaissance area, where a lot of the innovation actually came about, or at least the spark of design, the spark of creation started. I'm talking about, you know, the four Ninja Turtle names in that era.
Oh, you're going back that far back.
And of course, Tyler Cowen actually argues, even 100 years ago, the steam engine revolution actually revolutionized everything. And he argues that the way you lived in 1940 is remarkably different if you had lived in 1920. In 1920, you didn't have the steam engine, you didn't have an affordable car, you didn't have a stove in your house, you didn't even have running water in your room. But in 1940, you do.
Yeah, so I guess the argument is innovation slowing down to the point where the increments of change are getting smaller? Or is it just the nature of change is different? Because, you know, we don't need to recreate the engine, but what we can do, perhaps in the age of big data, is connect the engine to another machine where they talk to each other and we can get our fridge to cook dinner for us with the ingredients inside.
So you know, in 1980s, they imagined this, right, Melissa, in Back to the Future, where you put in a small piece of pizza and
ooh,
voila.
I so want that to be true.
and it's possible. There is a scientist that is arguing that it's possible. He hasn't gotten FDA approved yet or approval yet. But you're right. So the argument is, what's next for innovation? And while he says that innovation is slowing down, it doesn't mean that the innovation is poorer, as it were, let's say 100 years ago. It just means that innovation is getting stronger, but the increments of change is different. So it's difficult to imagine, you know, wood fire engine versus a steam engine, but it's more of two computers trying to decide for, say, the organization, the bank, right, the country, which one is the best decision to make.
Right.
So, for instance, Waze in your phone, that is one of the biggest innovations that the country, the world has seen. But you don't actually feel it that much.
Oh, I do. Trust me, I do. But okay, so I hear what you're saying. Just the thing is, you know, when you talk about, because going back to the story that you mentioned a little earlier, Ibrahim, about how, you know, companies like Apple, essentially, they're not creating brand new ideas. They're just revamping old ones. I don't think that's necessarily such a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't know whether that means we're running out of ideas, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Look at fashion, for instance. You know, one day shoulder pads will come back into fashion again, but it's just recycling old ideas with a new twist, right?
Yeah, so this whole recycling with a new twist is, if anything, everlasting. The whole idea of technology is to make our lives easier. So companies like Apple and now Microsoft and many more going forward, they always had a problem with, say, for instance, user interface.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big problem to inculcate the touchpad onto a laptop at one time. There was a problem on re-engineering the mouse, the external mouse. But we've solved all that with our finger. Now it's all touchscreen. And the latest laptops out there, not just Apple, but just any laptops out there, they are very sensitive to its touchscreen, and the touchpad is fantastic. So that problem is solved.
Yeah.
You see, that's just a small portion of technology. There's also the bigger portion of technology where it involves, we like to call it, artificial intelligence.
Intelligence, okay.
But essentially, it's also about cognitive decision making. So we've interviewed many of these companies. You've interviewed Waste. I've interviewed IBM. IBM has this company called Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And Watson is a problem solver. That's fantastic. So all you need to do is just ask Watson. It's like a Siri on steroids, right? And just ask Watson, complex decision making questions like, what is the credit facility made available for this area or for this customer?
Someone to do your thinking for you.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's a good thing. That might make us a bit lazy when it comes to thinking about problems and thinking things through.
The decision making will still be at the human end at the end of the day, because what these computers do is that they tabulate the cost benefit ratio, they tabulate the time needed to execute that particular decision. But at the end of the day, it's the humans that has to call the shot. Just like the steam engine, it's actually up to the trained engineer to drive it on the track or off the track, on track A or track B, to speed up or to slow down. The technology is there. The steam engine train is there. The steam engine machine is there. The printing press, for instance, is there. It's still that, For instance, the printing press have been around for the past 600 years. We still spew, tabloid, garbage, right?
Doesn't make the content any better.
Just, yeah.
The other story that came to our attention was, and you may have heard of this, a kind of a kerfuffle over an ad,
a racist ad.
Let's just call a spade a spade. So the manufacturer of a Kiaobi, which is a detergent line, they came up with an ad that had caused some controversy. So have you seen this ad?
I have seen this ad.
Why don't you explain to those who haven't?
It's a black man trying to kiss a Chinese girl, but the Chinese girl put the black man inside the washing machine and put some detergent, Xiaobi detergent, if I'm saying correctly, and out comes a Chinese man instead of a black man. And they say that, we clean, effectively.
That is so racist. They had to apologize
because it's a global uproar. In fact, the Telegraph had it nicely. The Telegraph said that watch this ad. If you don't know why it's racist, congratulations, you yourself is a racist.
Okay, so this is why I'm so surprised that in this day and age that some company, some marketer could put an ad out like this. I mean... We should know better by now. Yeah. How can I understand how this gets passed through all the many layers of approval.
So I had this big thing, right? I was like pulling my hair out when I was watching this, and my wife said
6.5 million times it's been watched on YouTube.
I'm pretty sure, right? And my wife said, "All right, yeah, I'm just welcome to China. This is how the Chinese companies try to do things. This is her argument, and she says that it may be a sinister way of marketing stuff.
But you remember there was one ad from Thailand as well. I think it was like a Fair and Lovely ad where a skin whitening. Not Fair and Lovely the brand, but a skin whitening ad where an actress got darker with time, and then she lost her role to a younger, fairer actress.
Yeah,
if I'm
and what is sad is that Thailand is the home of fun commercials, funny commercials, memorable commercials.
But I think I wonder whether this is an Asian cultural thing where we treasure and we prize fair skin.
Yeah, and that in itself is racism. And I think what this advertisement brings about is that we still need to cover a lot of ground in terms of understanding the notion that skin color doesn't matter. And of course, beauty is only skin deep.
I'm surprised that we still have ads like this in this day and age. Tell us if you've watched the ad. 0162019000 is the number to text, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio, hashtag tell BFM. I mean, have you seen the ad? Were you completely offended by it? And tell us if you know why ads like these still see the light of day in this day and age.
Yeah. Just tweet us at BFM Radio and tell us what you think.
0162019000 is the number to text, just to repeat one more time. 6:51 right now, we've got the news bulletin coming up in under 10 minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.